Hello and welcome to the Storytelling with Puck podcast. We will, as always, start with a story.
As we know, we get told a lot of things of what is to be successful. What do we need to be, you know, successful in our careers? And, you know, of course, we're told, you know, go to school, get good grades, be well-rounded, join a lot of extracurricular activities, take into leadership positions, and, you know, also get internships. That's going to be the key to success, and it's really going to catapult your career overall. And unfortunately, that's not how life actually works. And I found myself in this scenario where I was a straight A student. I had a scholarship from Bill and Melinda Gates, where I had, you know, paid for everything, even up to my PhD. And I've done multiple internships. I also did a few part-time jobs to make sure that I was developing that skill set, that those work skills that I know are so highly desired. Once you're, you know, ready to graduate and go on and take a full-time job. And unfortunately, that's just not how life happened for me. And I know I'm not the only one. And when it came to graduation, I was excited. I started applying to jobs. I thought, you know, I'm going to get so many job offers and interviews. I'm going to get to handpick all of my offers out there. And of course, I'm going to get a really great salary just starting out. That's what I've been told. That's what everyone promised me will happen after graduation. And unfortunately, I found myself with one interview and I had just one offer. That was it. And it was really heartbreaking for me because, like I mentioned, I did everything instead of, you know, going, I'm not going to say that I didn't go to the parties, but there were many times where I did make some sacrifices because I knew that at the end, it was going to help me be successful. And that's not how life usually happens. And I know that it happens to a lot of us as well, where we do everything, you know, we put in that extra work, you know, we volunteer for projects, we know, or we hope that we're going to get that promotion or that salary increase. But for some reason, we just get promotions, or we don't get that salary increase, or we don't even get noticed or feel appreciated at work. And that was a pivotal moment for me because I knew that even doing all the right things that we're told to do isn't going to be the key to success. I needed to learn what the other game is being played around me that I needed to know in order for me to be successful. And this really catapulted me into my new journey of figuring out what do I need to know and need to do in order to be successful when I don't have a network. I'm the first one in my family to graduate, you know, from high school. So it's not like I have a lot of mentors guiding me towards this process. And it's a journey I felt like I had to take on my own. But fortunately, there was a lot of mentors and books out there that can really help me with this process. And I feel like I finally cracked the code on what it is to be successful, especially within the workplace. And a lot of these foundations can actually be used towards business. And it's been very successful for me and for my clients, where now I know how to get multiple job offers. I know how to negotiate, you know, salary increases and even get up to $100,000, earning more than what I was previously making. And I can do this over and over again across any industry that I'm interested in. But again, it's something that I had to learn. It's not something that we're taught in school. It's not a skill set that a lot of people even know. And we at times just feel ourselves kind of like lost, as if we're not even steering the wheel. And then a few years later, we realize, like, how did I end up here? How did I end up in this industry or this job or in this role where it might not even be a reflection of what I even graduated with? I never even wanted to do this. And that's when I realized that sometimes you got to do what others won't to achieve what others can't. And there is another game being played around you that will not be taught in school.
There's often games being played, as you say, and things that you can't see that are being taught in school. But we'll talk about that more in a second. Firstly, thank you, Claudia, for sharing your story. I can't wait to find out more about you and to dig in a bit more to the details. But before we do that, let's have a quick introduction to the podcast.
You're listening to Storytelling with Puck, the podcast designed to show the power of stories in life and in business. Stories connect us on a deeper level, which is why we'll be sharing, chatting about, and feeling the impact they have on every one of us. Your host, Stefano, is the founder of Puck Creations, and we work with your business to define a clear, consistent, relevant brand which stands out from the crowd. We use that brand to create content that makes your audience think, feel, and take action. Visit puckcreations.com to find out more.
Before you do that, it's time to hear a strategy on how to become one of the top sought-after candidates in the market and to find out a little bit more about today's incredible guest, Claudia Miller. Claudia, please tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah. So, I mean, from what you heard from that story, I consider myself to be like a really great, ambitious, top A student. I've always been like a bookworm, and I was that annoying student at the front of the class, always asking questions. And I still find myself doing that, but in other forms where I still continue my education. And now it's mostly towards, you know, how to stay current with, you know, job searching trends, and as well as, you know, everything related to business, whether it's marketing, publicity, you know, operations, finance, I mean, and everything else in between. But, you know, now I love what I do. I love working with ambitious and driven women who are looking to accelerate in their careers, earn more because they tend to be very underpaid, and able to do that so effortlessly and confidently without having to feel like you're gonna about to confront someone or have an awkward conversation. It's done in a way that is very personable and very collaborative, that in a way, a lot of clients tell me that they're so surprised how easy and collaborative people are by the way that they ask, that they never even thought that they can ask that specific way. So I am so happy with what I'm doing now and just helping women to change their livelihoods at times and really help them progress in their careers.
So let's dig into that a bit more. How does it all start? How, if I were in their shoes and if I were struggling and wondering what to do with the next stage of my career, and I came and I'd heard about you and I wanted to, I had no idea where to start. Let's pretend I am your perfect candidate in that way, your perfect clients in that way. And I came and said, look, help. What would the first thing be that you did?
Yeah, I would ask you, you know, well, what specifically is prompting you to reach out to me? There's always something specific, whether it's, hey, I had a client tell me, I've been job searching for a year. I've applied to over 300 jobs. I had 3 interviews and I have no job offers. I hate my job. I don't know what else to do. I feel like I'm going to be stuck in this job forever. Okay. Now I understand you've already tried job searching. You don't know what's going on, but also it's important of like the language you use, because as a career coach, I can only help people that want to be helped. If you were to tell me, well, you know, Claudia, I know why I haven't had a job. It's because of the economy and it's just so competitive out there. It has nothing to do with me. Then you're not coachable. I can't teach you because you are blaming outside factors. I work with people that are willing to take responsibility, saying, I don't have any interviews. I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but I know I'm not selling myself the right way. I don't even know if a person is even reviewing my resume at this point. I might be stuck in an ATS system. So based on the verbiage you use with me while we're talking, it tells me already a lot about you. So if you were to say that specific answer, I know that you're coachable and you're willing to learn and do the work that it takes for you to be successful.
So tell me a bit more about that then. What kind of work does it take?
So when working with me, every career coach is very different. And for me is, I'm going to give you all the tools and resources to help you be successful. But at the end of the day, I cannot apply to jobs for you. I cannot network in your behalf. I can't interview for you. So a lot of it, it's teamwork. I show you, I'm like the coach, and then you're the player. You have to do the practice. You have to do the work in order for you to see the result. And that's, you know, something that some things may come across. Maybe some of your doubts may come up. Well, Claudia, I feel that I might be too underqualified for this role. It says it needs 10 years. I only have 6. It also mentions these skill sets. I don't know anything about it. And, you know, while having someone like myself working with you, I can give you more clarity and really good insight into what the industry is. A job posting is just like a wish list. You know, you're not always going to get everything. And if you do get everything, it's going to come at a cost. And not every company is willing to pay that. So that's when they have to make some compromises. And you as an employee, if you do match everything in a job description, then it means it's not allowing you to grow in your role or in your career. So you should be challenging yourself. So
that's interesting. Sorry to interrupt, but it's a really interesting point you make. So would you suggest that if you completely match the job description, that potentially it's the wrong job to go for?
Correct. It's time for you to move to the next step up.
Okay, it definitely something that I imagine most people don't think of at the beginning when they're looking for jobs. It's definitely would be a stepping stone. And to tell me more then with what you're doing to help people, you're giving them, I guess, the realization that, as you say, a job offer is there to ask for their ideal potential candidate, but it's not there for their minimum target, right? Mm-hmm. So that, I guess, will give them a bit more of a reality check. But how much of it is also to do with confidence? Because at the beginning of your last answer, you mentioned that when people come to you, they might say, not everyone, but some people might say things like, oh, I don't think I'm qualified enough for this job. And it's not just about the things that are written on the paper necessarily, but it's also sometimes about things that are going on in their own mind. So how much of it is to do with confidence, and how do you help them with that?
So we all have a limited amount of confidence, especially when it comes to job searching. After a while, we keep hearing no, 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 and getting no results, that confidence keeps lowering. So, you know, one of the things is I assess, where's your confidence at? Where are you? And, you know, when I work with clients, there's different steps that I help them do specifically to help them understand and really help them with their confidence. So one assignment is, you know, make a list of all your achievements that you've done within your career or professionally, and sometimes personally, to remind you of who you are as a candidate. We are always very in the present tense. What I mean is, you don't think about all your achievements and your accolades throughout your whole life. You're probably thinking about what you did last week, maybe a few months ago, or maybe you didn't do so on a project, and that becomes kind of like your compass, as opposed to what everything you've done throughout your whole career. You've always been a really great student, Stefano. You started a podcast. You've interviewed so many great people. You have a podcast that's attracted so many listeners and, you know, followers that really like to listen to what you have and listen to your creativity. But we don't always think that in the back of our mind. So we're always thinking negative, or who are these people that I'm competing against with? So that's one, making a list of all your accomplishments, achievements to really help you connect with your confidence. The second is, before my clients go into an interview, they've networked. So they already have a good pulse on the industry and the company itself. So they already talked to people within the company and within the industry itself. And they ask questions like, what is the hardest skill to hire for this role? You don't have to have everything in that job posting. You just need to be able to address those pain points that the hiring manager is currently experiencing, and they need someone to solve it. So those things are what's going to really make you stand out. And the job description becomes irrelevant. And there's actually studies that I've seen, and I don't know the exact percentage, but I know that it's around like 66% of professionals say that what they're doing in the role does not match at all with what was on the job description. So don't rely on the job description. It's a kind of like, here's what to know, but don't really believe everything, and things might change. And especially with COVID, a lot of people's jobs change from night and day. You know, especially they were working at live events and they were doing experiential marketing. That has stopped after COVID. And now they were doing, webinar events and, you know, Zoom events. And obviously they might not have had any experience, but they had to be nimble in order for them to transition. So don't always rely on a job description. It just, for me, a job description just tells me that one, there's a job opening and they're willing to pay. And then two, what department it is, and kind of have an idea of what they're looking for, but it's not going to be concrete. I don't need to fill everything. I even applied to a job where I think I only qualified 30% of that job, and they were looking for someone with a nursing degree. I don't have a nursing degree, and I only have 30%, and I got that job offer and still got a $30,000 salary increase.
Wow, that's impressive. So, It's really interesting what you say there as well, because I know coming at it from the other angle, where I've been in the position of hiring people, and before Puck Creations, working for some bigger companies, often the job role that goes out, the job role that's asking, it doesn't come from the department that I'm working in. It doesn't come from my manager. It doesn't come from my manager's manager. It comes from somebody in HR. Mm-hmm. Or potentially somebody at the very top of the company. And they go, oh, this is probably the kind of thing that we need in that department. By the time you get to the interview stage, the person you're talking to only has half of an idea of what's even in the job description in the first place. The interview that they're doing is more about, as you say, getting to know the person, getting to understand competencies and skills, etc. In a good company, this doesn't happen as often as I would like. It should also be about, this is actually a lot of what we do at Puck Creations, it should also be about getting to know the values of the person, what their goal is, their determinators are. But as you say, the job description is almost not even secondary, it's a tertiary matter for the people who are actually doing the hiring. But most candidates don't realize that. They think it's everything. And so it's great how you give them that confidence boost by explaining that to them. I find it really impressive. And also, by the way, thank you for all of your compliments for me. I'm going to have a big head by the end of this podcast episode.
Well, as you can see, like, sometimes we don't realize why we should be confident, because a lot of us don't always tell each other, like, oh, great job, Stefano. Like, you know, you did really great today. You interviewed another candidate and another person. You had a really great conversation. And I know it's going to value to a lot of the listeners. And you tell that self over and over again. Like, we just say, hey, we just record an episode, now on to the next, right? And hopefully listeners enjoy it. But we don't put full perspective and almost like a high level overview of our life and our achievements. And even to your point, when you're applying to big companies, like you said, the job posting descriptions coming from HR, one, they're not the subject matter expert in what happens in the day-to-day basis of that role or within that department. And two, when the companies are so big, they almost have like templates of job postings. Yeah. Oh, what it sounds like, I think this is the closest thing we can find. And here's what the salary range looks like for this role. And if you need to make any changes, you need to come to our quarterly committee meeting where you make a business case on why we should change this job description. And if the board approves, then we can move forward. And then you should have that new updated job posting in 5 months. This person needs to be already working within 5 months. So a lot of people are just not going to go through that hassle of going, you know, updating this job posting, where they'd rather just say, let's just post it. And then once we interview them, we'll tailor it and tell them more about the department and the role itself. So it's a very common practice.
This technically isn't what you deal with on a day-to-day basis, because you're dealing with the candidate side of things and you're dealing with the coaching and getting them into their role. But I'm interested just to know your thoughts, because it's your industry, on what you think about the way that these descriptions are made up and the way that people and companies do actually hire, because it very much crosses over with what we do in some senses, because when we go in and we speak to clients about their brand and defining it and helping them to understand who they are, one of the big reasons we tell them that we do that is so that when it comes to the hiring process, that they are hiring people for the right reasons. They're not hiring people based on, well, they're really good at Microsoft Word and Excel. So I think that's a good reason to bring somebody in. They're hiring people because actually they believe in the same things that we do. They have the same idea on what's right in this area of a business and what's right in this area of a business. They have these competencies and these skills. They have these, I think I mentioned earlier, these values. And then the very, very, very specific, oh, and they're good at this part of the job, is way down the line, because you can teach people a lot of that stuff.
Exactly.
So that's what we do when we're working with companies quite a lot. Don't be wrong, we're not there to help them the hiring process specifically, but it's an after effect. What about for you when you're working with the candidates, do you ever get frustrated by the way that companies are hiring? Does that kind of, is it a bugbear for you at all? Is it just me?
Yeah, no, I do get frustrated because not every manager is meant to be a manager. They might have been a great sole contributor. They might have been a really great employee, top employee, but it doesn't mean that they will make a really good manager or director. Uh-huh. And not all companies offer that training on how to be a really great manager or director. And, you know, I've seen where, you know, my clients had really great background, achievements, accolades. They had referrals within people within the company themselves. But when it came to this specific manager, you know, one of my clients was actually told, well, who helped you make this presentation? It sounds like somebody must have helped you because I would not believe that you came up with something like this. And no one helped my client. I gave like feedback, but it's not like I built it for them. Like I said, I am not the career coach that's going to do your presentation for you. I would never do that because at the end of the day, it needs to come from you. It's your brand, your style. And at that point, I discussed with my client, like, to me, if this is going to be your hiring manager, it's already a red flag for me. You're always going to be questioned. Your integrity has already been questioned when you've never even given a reason. And they can't believe the hard work that you've put in and that you've already done a great job, probably in comparison to her current employees or what she could even come up with. So I always give advice, but I can't make those decisions for you. Thankfully, my client went elsewhere and then found a really great boss that was impressed by like the work that she did and, you know, really helped her almost like now at this point, like that boss had become her mentor and really is helping her move up in her career. But you always got to be wary of who is interviewing you because that could either accelerate or slow down your career growth.
That makes a lot of sense. Actually, you touched on something there, which I find really interesting. I'm a strange person in that I used to love job interviews. I'm one of the few rare exceptions in the world. we're in the same place, right? But part of the reason was because I used to really enjoy, I guess this is why I now am a podcast host, I used to really enjoy flipping the switch a little bit and starting to interview the company. Because as far as I was concerned, and I can't remember where this started. I think it was good advice I was actually given by my sister as a kid. When I first started going to interviews, I was told to treat it like I'm interviewing them. The whole point is to work out whether or not I want to work for the company. If they also happen to want to hire me, then brilliant. But actually, the reason I'm there at the interview is to work out if I love the company. The reason I mention it is because you talked about the idea that if you're sitting in front of a hiring manager and they seem not the best, that they seem to be asking strange questions, questioning your integrity. I'm amazed by the idea that somebody was asked whether or not they really made the presentation. I mean, that's incredible. But if they're doing that kind of stuff, then it comes back to what we were talking about earlier, having the confidence to actually say, you know what? Well, I don't need you because I can go and find another job elsewhere because I know I've got the skills. How do you work with your clients, I guess, in helping them to understand that just because you're going for an interview, it doesn't mean you have to take a job? How do you kind of get them to believe that? Because sometimes I find that a really hard thing to persuade people of.
So it actually starts before that even gets to that point. So when my clients, we work together, I have them make a list of 30 top clients, companies they want to work with. And this is before we dive into research. So 30 top companies is usually like big companies like, oh, I would love to work at PlayStation, Netflix, Hulu, Peloton, Facebook, Google, Amazon. And eventually, like, maybe that'll capture the first 10, 15. Then they're like, well, I don't know. Like, well, I show them research very different ways on how they can identify the other 15. And they always start with these big companies, you know, the shiny companies that everyone wants to work with. And I show them how to do true research. You know, is this company healthy? Would they be doing layoffs in the next 3 to 6 months? Where are they allocating their resources? What is their main goal for the next fiscal year? And that's going to give them a lot of insight. So, for example, if you're an engineer and the company has just finished releasing a product and now they're looking to market and sell it to the market, their resources are going to go to sales and marketing, not engineering. So you're going to be fighting against a wall at that point because they already created that product and they're focused on selling. So that's not really going to accelerate your career. Instead, we want to look for a company that's looking to make improvements into their current, you know, technology, or they're looking to develop a new one. Now we know as an engineer, that's the perfect fit for you. That's really going to skyrocket your career comparison to that other company. So they're quick. Once they realize how to do research, out of that 30, it comes down to 10 companies. Okay. And they come and tell me, and they realize, I'm so glad I did this research, because before this, I thought this will be it. Like, if I could get a job at this company, I've made it. Like, I am going to be so successful, and it's going to be really great for my career. And once I dug into the research, this is a sinking ship in the making. There's a lot of like writing on the wall. People are leaving. It looks like they have been in the red for a while, and they need to cut costs somewhere. So even if you're not the one person let go, you probably have to do with, you know, 30% of the resources as opposed to the 100%. And at that point, you're set up to fail. You're not going to get your bonus at the end of the year because of performance reviews, because you were not even able to succeed. And it's just a snowball effect, and it impacts your confidence and everything else. Whereas you had gone to the other company, all of a sudden you're like, I'm getting noticed and promoted. I've done really great work. And we were able to go from A to B because it gave me the resources that I needed to succeed. And it's just an amazing place to work at. Those could be same roles, two different companies. So when it comes to interviewing, they're looking for any reason to red flags to say, I'm going to remove you because I have 8-9 other companies that I've already been referred to. I know are really going to be great. They're going to set me up for success. And if it doesn't seem like you'd be a great manager, then this is just not going to work out. I have other companies and interviews to do. So that's where that comes from. Yeah,
that's brilliant. I really like that because, as you say, I think getting that early on, before you ever get anywhere near the interviews, is so, so important. And having that realization, and also having a few options in mind, because as you say, they have lots of options in mind to start off with. But even when you narrowed it down, you didn't narrow it down to just one. You narrowed it down to kind of 10 and then five. And then so that still, even with some of the companies that they do want to go and work for, they know that actually, if they don't get that particular position, it's okay, because there are mm-hmm. other options, and there's still the options that they really care about and want to go to. So I love that. I think it's brilliant. Now, as you know, this whole podcast is about stories. I haven't asked you about this in advance, so I'm putting you on the spot a little bit. And for privacy reasons, we can change names, etc., if needs be. But is there one particular candidate that really stands out to you that you remember the whole process and just think, wow, the change in their life that I've managed to put them through from beginning to end? Can you maybe kind of guide us through that story? And like I say, if their names, you don't want to use their name, I completely understand. You can change it or just call them Candidate X, whatever you want to do.
Of course. No, so I have a few, but one person that really stands out to me is, you know, she came to me 2 years ago for resume writing only. She's like, I only need my resume. I just need to be able to sell myself, and that's all I need. So I did her resume, and she was getting interviews. And at the time, you know, she was like, well, maybe I'll do some interview coaching with you. And we started practicing with interview coaching. And I told her, by the way, based on what I see in the market, I mean, at the time she was switching industry. So she was in architecture, looking to move into data science, two different fields, but she had just finished her master. She wanted to make that change. And I knew there's a lot of earning potential within that market. I told her you could probably get anywhere between 120 to 150. And at the time, I think she might've been making like 65, 70. She's like, okay, there's just no way I could be making that much. I'm just graduating. I have no experience. I'm making, you know, before I started my master's degree, I was making 65, maybe 70,000 if I was lucky. And she just didn't listen to me and got a job making 90,000. Still really great job, but she's like, nope, I'll take the 90,000. I'm happy. This one of the first few companies that offered me a job. So I'm not even going to continue with the process. And a year later comes by and she reaches out to me, Claudia, you're right. I am severely being underpaid at work by like 30, 40,000. Not only that, I'm being overworked. I'm just burned out. I hate it. I learned so much, but it's taking a toll on my personal life. And the fact is, like, at least I would have been making $40,000, $50,000 more, but it's not even that. I'm making very little in comparison to my counterparts. and I'm looking to buy a house and I'm moving to this other stage of my life. And I feel that I just can't move forward and I don't have time to job search because I'm being worked. Like she was working from like 8 a.m. to like 9, 10 p.m. It was in consulting for data science. So it's just a lot of work that they usually demand of you. So this time I'm like, I want to start this doing the right thing, but you know, please listen to my advice because I don't want you making the same mistake over and over again. And a year later, you find yourself in this position. I try to find ways on how can I set you from success from the beginning. I don't want you going to a job where they're going to start doing layoffs in the next 2 to 3 months. That's why I have you do the research from the beginning. I don't want you to go into a job that's going to set you up for failure. Because at the end of the day, then you're going to find yourself 6 months or 12 months later saying, I need a job search again because I hate this job and this company. So we worked together and this time she listened and she was able to get a job at a really top Fortune 500 company with $150,000 salary. I think they gave her like around $15,000 sign-on bonus plus $40,000 worth of stock. And she was going to be the team lead. And she only had about, at this point, 2 years of experience, team lead for like a big project that they're doing. And now she's getting approached by Google and Facebook to see if she'd be interested in interviewing for them. At that point, she already knows how to understand what her market value is. So she told Google, you know, I just started this job. I'm flattered, but I'm not considering any job unless it's more than 200,000 at this point. Google said, we can make that work. So
I like that it's the switch of control that we were talking about earlier. So you can do that in interviews, but you can also do that in your work as well so that you understand your value and you know that when people start wanting you, that's the point where you are completely, as you say, you flipped everything around. So that's perfect. It's a brilliant story. So I'm going to let you continue because I don't think you were quite at the end, but I just wanted to.
And this is now like she at this point, she just can't believe like this is her life at this point. She never applied to Google. She never applied to Facebook. Honestly, probably because she didn't feel as confident. I mean, she felt like she only had 2 years of experience, but these are the companies coming to her. I have another client, same scenario where Google, Facebook, and Amazon are coming to her for interviews. And she's, you know, she told them, I'm currently busy at the moment. So I can't, if we were to have this conversation, I can't do it until like November, December. I'm working on a big project. What is your timeline to hire? They said, we're very flexible. We'll work around your schedule. When could be a good time that we can reach out to you? So again, it's that control factor, but all her marketing assets, her LinkedIn, like is on point. And I always say brand yourself for the role you want, not for the role you currently have. So her LinkedIn is on point. If they were to ask for her resume, it's already updated and complete. So she can immediately send it with a completed cover letter. So to her, this is so easy and it works around her schedule, her timeline, and what her salary is because she truly does enjoy where she works at. She's set up for success. She's like, I've actually never been as confident as I am now. I feel comfortable, you know, speaking up where I'm not being put down. I'm seen as a leader within the company itself. I'm a team lead. She actually hosts like weekly lunch and learns to talk about like different challenges that any person has gone through, depending on some of the projects that relates to data science. And like, she's doing really great strides. And now she can say, you know, to Google, you know, actually I'm really happy where I'm at, unless it's over 200,000 where it's worthwhile me moving, then I'll consider having a conversation. But at this point, I'm just not currently looking. And there are companies that, you know, will court you. It's almost like dating. You might say like, I'm with a boyfriend right now, but if it doesn't work out or something, I mean, it's not going to be true dating, but it's, no, they're trying to court her.
I'm just thinking if my partner's listening right now, I hope you're not going to do that kind of dating. But
no, but it's like Google is now courting her. They're saying, this work. You know, did you want to get the certification? Did you want to go back to school? We'd be happy to pay for it. And this is just base. Like, this is not even including like the stock or sign-up bonus they might be able to offer her, especially since she's leaving this company. So those conversations start happening. And, you know, it's very common once you know how to do it right. I know that my young self, if I would have heard this after getting one interview and one job offer, I would have said like, I can't believe this. Nope. I've only had one interview, one job. So therefore, how can people be approached by Google? That sounds ridiculous. And that's because I just didn't know how to do it right. I didn't know how to market myself. I didn't know what people were looking for and what was the hardest skill to hire for. But now that I've learned through the years and I refined my framework, now my clients are getting $100,000 salary increases when, you know, 7 years ago, I was getting $30,000 salary increases. So it keeps refining as time goes on.
Let's go back to that a little bit, actually, because that's really interesting where you started with. I mean, this isn't the very, very start, but you talked about getting a scholarship from Bill and Melinda Gates, which is impressive in and of itself. Let's start there. How did you get the scholarship? Why did you get the scholarship? What was it that made you stand out from the crowd initially?
As you've heard, Claudia Miller certainly stands out. Working hard as a child and young adult paid off, but it felt like it might not when she moved from studying into the real world. Now, she's a great help to others, trying to make their way in the world too. We'll be digging deeper into Claudia's story in the second part. We'll touch on determinations, the reasons Claudia kept pushing forward, and what balance means to her. We will of course finish with a story from Pub Creations, and talking of stories, are you leaning forward? Well, you will be when you listen to the magnificent Andrew Forbes, and here he is to tell us more.
We're all in the persuasion business, whether that's pitching to a potential client, selling ourselves in a job interview, or convincing a teenager to tidy their room. How we frame our message and how we deliver it makes all the difference. And this is the theme of my podcast, Leaning Forward. I'm Andrew Thorpe. I'm a speaker, a trainer, and a storyteller. And I'd love you to tune in to our latest episode.
Yeah, so I grew up from humble beginnings. And like I said, my mom had a sixth grade education and I believe my dad had a seventh grade education. So I knew the only way out of poverty was through education. There was no other way for me. So, and of course, if I get good grades, I get a good job. If I get a good job, I get paid well, and then I'm successful.
Sorry to interrupt. How did you know that? Because a lot of people don't actually know that. A lot of people don't necessarily realize that the way people have all of these different thoughts about different ways you can make money. They have, you know, I'm going to become the best salesperson in the world. I'm going to rob a bank. I'm going to, you know, whatever it is. People have lots of different ideas on how you could potentially earn money. How did you realize that education was so important?
Well, I mean, I never consider myself to be like brave or whatever you want to call it that to rob a bank. I get anxiety. I get nervous.
I should say we're not advertising robbing a bank to anyone here, but it's like,
I'm a scary cat. I'm, like I said, I was like the student in the front and I'm very competitive too. Like, oh, I'm the first one that finished my homework and I got them all right. So It's just that innate competitiveness that I have, but I knew I couldn't, you know, sell drugs or rob a bank, like too much anxiety for me. I can't handle it. I would not do well in jail. And then as a salesperson, I was never exposed to it. I thought salespeople were the ones that you go into the store at Macy's and they try to sell you perfume. Like I considered that to be sales or the sleazy car salesperson. So I really lived in a bubble where, you know, my mom was like a beautician. My dad worked at a factory. My stepdad was a truck driver. So I was very limited. I never knew what corporate America looked like. I just knew that in the shows and movies, like they all like were successful, wore suits and they got promotions and bonuses. And I never knew anyone that had anything remotely close to it. So I knew that I had to education. That was going to be it. I don't have networks. I don't have someone, you know, introducing me and getting me into new companies. So the only way that I can get out was education. And so I had to really, you know, dive myself into the books. And like I said, I needed to go into a good college. And I know that for good colleges, or at least my post-secondary counselor said, is you have to be well-rounded. Just because you're a good student isn't going to be enough. So then I joined National Honor Society. I joined the bilingual club, the French club, the dance club, the math league. I used to go on Saturday mornings and take math tests for 3-4 hours, and they called it a competition. And I just did anything that I needed to do. And I took a part-time job while I was in high school. And eventually, you know, when it came to it, I knew my parents couldn't help me with help me with a loan or student loan or whatsoever. They couldn't pay for my college. I had to figure out how was I going to pay for my college education. At the end of the day, it's my degree. So it's like my problem to solve. So I just applied to a lot of scholarships, and by the grace of God, I got the Bill and Melinda Scholarship, because it's only 1,000 recipients that get it a year. And I think there's over 50,000 applicants.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well done.
So like I said, that's how, if I didn't get the scholarship, I was either going to go to community college for 2 years and then go to college for the next 2 years. And hopefully they'll accept me for a loan, even though I had nothing to my name.
But you had a plan B. That's interesting. College. So you already had a plan B. You already had kind of this determination for someone of such a young age. I mean, I can't imagine myself thinking ahead that far at that age. And I imagine a lot of our listeners will be the same. They potentially will rely on parents, or they'll rely on other family members, or if they're in a similar position to yourself and they can't rely on people, even then they might think, well, okay, if I don't get in, then I don't know what I'm going to do. But they won't have a plan B or a plan C or whatever it is to get themselves. There's almost an inherent determination in that, which is really impressive to see. And so we get to the stage then that you got the scholarship, which is fantastic. And you did really well. You kept on learning. You kept on being the bookworm, as you said. You kept on studying and getting the grades you needed. And then you didn't word it quite like this. I'm paraphrasing, but then reality hits, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trust me, I was devastated. I'm pretty sure I was crying for the next few days. Like, how? And kind of to your point, I think that innate determination came from poverty and trauma. Honestly, I'd rather die trying than not try at all, because I don't want to stay here. There's no way. Like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to do if I need to take an extra job. And at some point, I think even in college, even though I had a full ride scholarship, they gave me money for my personal expenses. They paid for my dorm. They paid for my books. They paid for my apartment at some point. I still worked 3 jobs and went to school full time. And I still try to be involved, you know, within activities within the university as well. So it was just kind of like that feeling. And then that's why it became so imperative for me when I didn't get those job interviews and those job offers. I was distraught. I did everything, like everything, more than I needed to do sometimes. And that's what I was left with. I felt ashamed. I felt guilt. I felt like maybe I did it in, like, what could I have done wrong? I don't know at that point. It was that frustration. Yeah. And that's what really, like, it really told me, or I found in myself saying, my books and everything are great, but there's another part to this equation that I need to learn and figure out. And that's what embarked this journey. And it was more for me to learn the skill set for myself. It wasn't for me to start a business out of it. It was just, I need to figure out the solution. There's people out there
This time you didn't have that far ahead of a plan of starting a business.
Yeah, no, I didn't.
But you did. Yeah.
I know, I'm like, some of like the newest self-made billionaires came from nothing. How do they do it? And how can I do it? And let me get in contact with them. Let me buy their courses. I'll read their books. Whatever I need to do, I will do it. And I, you know, cold email people. I put myself out of my comfort zone, and eventually it started getting me those results where then I was getting those $30,000 salary increases.
Did you have people around you? Because there are, you know, people go through all sorts of different situations in their life, and people go through poverty, and people go through a range of things that I have never experienced, some things that I have experienced that are difficult in my life. I lost one of my parents at a very young age, for example, and that gave me a certain determination in some ways. And but the way we react to experiences isn't the same. So there would have been people in a similar position to you who would not have reacted in any way near the way that you did in terms of the focus. And as you say, you were desperate to get out. And so the determination was there because of such a strong underlying motivator. But even people with a similar motivation may not have done the same thing. So the reason I'm describing it this way is I wanted to ask the question, were there people around you who were supportive and who were giving you the guidance and who were telling you these things, who were advising you that, look, if you really, really want to make it, if you really don't want to be stuck and doing the same things as we're doing in this life, then the way forward is to educate yourself, etc. What did you have, I guess, those good mentors, those good people?
Yeah, I would say most of them. I mean, it was teachers for a long time. I mean, I was a straight A student. I was the good girl. I mean, I was teacher's pet. I'm not going to lie. They were always like, you know, God, you're doing great. You're doing really good. Oh, I have this activity program, you know, for you to get into college, you have to be well-rounded. So they did help me. And then when I started getting internships, then it was my mentors through those internships saying, like, you're really good at this. And at some point, actually, I was studying to be an architecture major because in my mind, that was the definition of success. I didn't want to be a lawyer because I like to read, but not like at that level. And I couldn't be a doctor because I get nauseous around blood needles. And so I'm like, okay, maybe I'll be an architect. And it has a lot of, you know, recognition. People, you know, say it all like, wow, you're an architect, it needs education. I assumed it was a lot of money involved. And then I realized, like, I don't like architecture. I'm good at it.
A really key part.
Yeah, I don't want to do it. So what was a leading factor for a while was, like, I need to, if I'm putting all this hard work, it has to be for something like architecture or being a lawyer. And then it took a lot of self-discovery to realize that's not, I'm doing it for the wrong reasons. And I had a mentor that told me, if you want to be an architect for the money, you can might as well be a truck driver. You'll earn the same amount of money and you'll probably have more freedom than an architect. So that's when I knew that it wasn't going to be that track for me, but I did have mentors lead me through that way. Because like I said, my mom didn't know anything about this world. She didn't, like, I had to apply to colleges on my own. I didn't even know certain colleges existed. Like, that's how much in a bubble. I didn't know University of Chicago existed. And when I heard University of Chicago, I just thought they meant University of Illinois at Chicago. Like, so silly of them. So I really lived in a very small bubble. And I just knew that it wasn't going to be towards my mom. And I needed to find other sources. And thankfully, I had really great teachers and post-secondary counselors that, you know, really helped me along this journey and really provided me with these opportunities that really moved forward. But again, I had to do the work. I can't expect that if I was a horrible student, didn't show up, I ditched a lot of classes, I never showed up. Like, I could not find those mentors because I wasn't showing up to be the person to be worth mentoring. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's important for you have to do the work yourself. And then people like that will be happy to help you and mentor you. And I find the same thing in business.
Sorry, that makes a lot of sense. That really makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting as well, because in some ways, you know, mentors can come as positive mentors that are active, but it can also come from the surroundings and the negativity of things going on. And that combination is what's key, I think. I think that's possibly what's helped in quite a few ways. So you had all of the struggles going on with the poverty and potentially the determination of people around even just trying to work just to live on the breadline. But then you also had the being a straight A student and having the positive mentors of seeing opportunity and seeing where you could potentially be and that helping you along the way as well. And then what I, coming back a little bit more chronologically, so because we've kind of bounced, we get to the stage where you're searching and you got one interview and one job offer, but it wasn't what you wanted, and you know, things felt like they were going wrong at the time. How did you come back out of that? How did you, I guess, have the strength to look in the right direction again and to start again after, you know, everything that you'd already done and then felt like you hadn't worked?
Yeah. So my first job was actually as a financial advisor. So I had to get licensed, got my series 6 and 63. I had to build my own book of business. I'll admit, the mentoring wasn't so great. It was more like sink or swim. And I'm a person that I like to visualize. I need to see you. I need to do it myself. I need to make the mistakes and understand from them. And I wasn't good at it. And it's not something I really enjoyed. I dreaded going to work. I hated it. I felt, you know, it was at some point it became commission based and I didn't feel like harassing my friends and family to buy life insurance from me in order to make a paycheck. And then eventually I started focusing on businesses. And then eventually there was a team where they're like, Claudia, we see your work ethic. You're just going in and out, just doing the work. I was the latest one there. I made the most calls. I booked the most meetings. They're like, we want you to be part of our team. And they were a very successful team. And then things started going very well for me. But because of the Gates Millennium Scholarship, they only allow you to take 1 year off after graduation. After that, if you don't go back for your master's degree, like it just goes away. So I knew I wanted to go back for my master's degree, especially since it's free. Like, how could I not? Remember, okay. Education is what's going to get me out of this. So I need to continue. And I told my job at that time, hey, I'm going to go back for my master's full time. I'll still work here, you know, full time. I just can't work the 80 hours, but I can work 40 hours. They said, okay. No, if you can't work as many hours as you currently are, then we don't want you here. That's fine. I quit and went full time on my job and then got a job at the university. And eventually within a few months, they're like, we want to offer you a full-time job. We want you to manage like the business operations here. And they were very understanding because it was part of the university. So I can go to work, go to lunch and go to class and then come back, continue working, get off that, and then go back to my nighttime classes, go home and do homework. And it just worked out for me at that point. And that's kind of what happened. And then, so I went from financial industry to the education industry. And then I was able to pivot into the healthcare industry within the hospital system, where I was able to get a $30,000 salary increase. And then I got noticed by the CEO, where he had me lead a task force of, you know, for the entire hospital. And I'm like teaching professionals that have 30 years, probably they have more experience, more than I've ever been alive at this point. And I'm the one telling them how they can get results when I have about 6 months of experience in the field. But again, it was through networking. I don't have to be the best. I just know how to connect with the best in order for me to get that knowledge and results.
That makes a lot of sense. Something that keeps cropping up as you're talking in my mind, and a part of the reason is it's something that coming from a background where I used to work in sales and marketing, I used to work ridiculously long hours and was constantly on the go, wanting to increase salary, wanting to get higher commission, et cetera, all of that kind of stuff. After a while, it became so much that I was only ever focusing on work and life got forgotten. So a word that keeps on cropping up as you've been talking is balance. How do you find balance in your life with all of the determination that you have, which is so impressive, all of the work that you do, all of the crazy hours that you were doing? How do you have a balance of getting what you want and also then enjoying the fruits of it, I guess, the fruits of your labor?
When I was doing my master's degree, working full time, and that's when I started my first business, there's no social life, but I knew there was, it was temporary just because, and I like this motto that says, and I'm trying to remember, it just totally blanked, but it means no, not for never, but for now. So meaning, no, I'm not going to, and I allow myself like during my birthday to go out, right? And maybe like twice a year, maybe for another friend's birthday. That was really it. Like I have these 2 years to commit to my education. I'm working because I need the income still. And I want to start a business. So I don't want to be, I just hate telling myself like, I want to start a business. I want to do that. I want to do that and never do anything. At some point I tell myself either you do it or just shut up about it. So that's when I'm like, all right, I'll start a business. I don't want to say that anymore without any backing behind it. And that was temporary. The parties will always be there. The social life will always be there. But depending on what your goal is at that point, something's got to give. At that point, it was my social life and I was okay doing it. At this point, I already had partied in college. And even though I was working 80 hours, I mean, there was nothing to study for. I was just working. Then I had the weekend. And so I still enjoyed my weekends. But now I have different priorities. I want to spend time with my husband and my puppy. Like I want to spend time with family. So I need to get smarter with the way that I work. So then I analyze where is my time being spent? Is it productive? Is it bring value to the company? Where can I put in my time and resources that's going to increase output and what I'm looking for? And what am I willing to give and, you know, for in order for me to achieve that? So I always make those analyzations, but it's different at every stage of my life. Like I said, I value now time with family and friends. As before, it was, I need to make the income. I need to make the money. Like, I will work as much as I need to in order for me to increase my income. Now it's, I want to increase my income without sacrificing my family and my friends.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. And as you say, it does depend on your life. And also, possibly part of the reason I think differently now is because I'm old with a bad back and all of that kind of stuff. So I think my priorities have changed. but as you say, once you're able to get to a stage where you can maybe sacrifice some of the work or change priorities and do things a little bit smarter, because you already have things in place, it's easier to do than it would have been if you had done that earlier on. So now you can have the balance a bit more. So that does make sense. It is often something I think about, but it makes sense the way you describe it. So it's absolutely brilliant. Now, we've talked a lot about kind of your story and how you got to where you are. And we've talked a little bit about some of the candidates that you've managed to get into the great positions. But how about for the future and the kinds of people that you're wanting to work with and what you're looking to do now as you move forward?
Yeah, so I mean, my business has changed over time. I mean, I worked with professionals across various industries, levels of experience, from, you know, recent graduates all the way to the executive suite. And, you know, where I'm taking my business now is primarily working with women in tech or within STEM itself. So, you know, I really enjoy working with women, especially because I feel that when you empower a woman, you empower the household. And by empowering a household, you create a safe home. So that's why that's where my primary focus comes from. And it kind of gives you an insight to like what my background and upbringing was, but I want to change livelihoods. I want women that have the potential, are willing to do the work, but they just don't know how. I want to be able to, you know, help them achieve those career goals that they're looking for. They could be making $100,000-$200,000 more than, you know, what they're currently at. It might take some time at times, but it's definitely possible. And they just need someone that can guide them and just get there and finally figure out this complexity around, you know, politics or office politics and how to network and networking the right way and all those things that I've, you know, painfully figured out at this point. Someone can learn in like 90 days or less, when it took me 4 to 5 years to learn that skill set. So that's where I'm moving towards with. It's a market that I enjoy working with. My husband is in technology sales, so I get a lot of insight into that industry as well. Plus, I have a lot of relationships.
And now you know that sales isn't just sleazy car salespeople or people selling perfumes at the shop, right?
Now I'm like, wait, why wouldn't I know about this type of work? I have a friend where she is like in her when she was in her mid-20s, she was making over $250,000. Like, to me, it just boggled my mind. Like, why did I know? If I had known that this existed when I was younger, I would have been, I don't need to go to school. I just need to become a great salesperson and that would increase my income. But I feel like God had a plan. So that's why I didn't know about it till later. But, you know, that's kind of like what I try to really expose myself, because I know that I'm still very limited with what I know or can experience with. So I need to expose myself to that in order to give me a true sense of reality at its core, or really expanding what I know or what my virtual reality is.
That makes a lot of sense. And of course, as well, there's not just, I know clearly money is a factor in terms of helping these ladies to increase their salaries. It's really, really important. But it's not the only factor in finding a new career. This, as we talked about at the very beginning, there's so many other things, determinators that make you want to work with or for a particular company. And so, yeah, maybe you could have gone into sales if you'd known about it when you were younger, but maybe you would have absolutely hated it. So as you say, the right career path was the one that you took potentially. You got to continue being educated, you got to continue to learn, and you now have a zest and a love for learning. So you can learn about lots of other things too, which maybe wouldn't have happened if you had decided That's to go true. Down the sales path. So
I continue to learn. I continue to read. So exactly, it's something exactly. I really do enjoy.
Oh, that's perfect. No, I love that. So we have a mixed audience. We have of listeners, of people from all over the world. You're working mainly with people, I imagine, from the States, or do you work with people from elsewhere? Well?
United States and Canada, because it okay. works very similar. I've had a lot of clients that are coming maybe from like the UK, and they're wanting to move to the US and look for work.
Of course, yeah.
So I've worked with clients like that as well.
Okay, brilliant. So if people want to find you, and to be fair, the way you just described it, people from all over the world, but especially from the US and Canada, where can they find out more about you? How can they get in touch?
Yeah, so they can go to my website at claudiatmiller.com. So T as in Tom, claudiatmiller.com. And through there, you know, I try to upload, I have my podcast in there called Roadmap to the Executive Suite, where I help women advance in their careers, whether they're at the beginning, mid, or later stages, and they're looking to eventually make it to the executive suite. So they can listen to that podcast there. And I have additional resources on my website as well.
Okay, that's brilliant. And also, if there are any other links and places you want people to go, we'll make sure we add them. Just before I let you go, tell us a little bit more about your podcast, because that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, so I started this podcast because I felt that when I was, you know, like I said, I consider this a very ambitious, but I feel like I didn't really see anyone like me kind of going through there. It was mostly, you know, I didn't come from an Ivy League degree or Ivy League school, and I just need to like, just show me. I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to do the work. Just show me, like, what do I do? And sometimes we do get stuck a lot of in our heads, you know, is it, oh, it must be me, or the market might be so bad. They told me I should just be grateful that I have a job. I shouldn't risk it and negotiate. And even after negotiating multiple times, my mom, I would tell her, hey mom, I got a job offer and I'm going to negotiate. She's like, no, don't. They're going to pull the offer. And like, mom, I've already negotiated multiple times and I received it. She's like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. You should just be grateful. So we always have like those surroundings. So how can we get out of our heads? How can we get tangible results? I feel like a lot of advice out there is so fluffy, meaning just network with people. Okay. Who, how do I identify them?
Yeah.
How do I reach out to them? What do I do after I reach out to them? What kind of questions should I ask them? So I'm very to the point, very strategic. I make it easy to implement. There's no fluff around it. I like to, something that you can take, implement and execute and then repeat over and over again. So I created the podcast primarily to, to break down misconceptions we may have around the executive suite, which is, oh, if I make it that far, I'm never going to see my family. Or it's going to be so demanding that I'm just going to be burned out. A lot of these women I interviewed, they see their families, they go to their, you know, baseball games from their kids, they pick them up from school, they have a lot of flexibility around their schedule because they are that high up, and they talk about how they're able to do everything. They just don't do it themselves. Like they hire cleaning people, they hire someone to meal prep, or they go through this service that sends them food. So that way they're not spending time there and they can use that time spent with family. So how do you get to that point? What makes a person stand out and get promoted to the executive suite? How do they do it? And, you know, what are the things around it can women implement nowadays that can really make their lives easier? Because I feel that even once you start having kids, all of a sudden that, you know, professional life you knew, it changes completely. So how can, you know, women that are in those situations get guidance from someone that's already, you know, at the top doing it? What are some things that we can learn from and we can still implement? And again, this is still also podcast. I use it to connect with really great women, and there's still a lot for me to learn, and I learned a lot of great insights from them.
That's brilliant. I think one of the key takeaways for me on all of the podcast episodes that I do is exactly the same as you, is that I learn every single time. I think actually in the podcast episode that came out on the day of us recording this with a lady named Jackie Goddard, she's absolutely fabulous. Go have a listen if you get a chance, everybody. In that episode, we talked about, because she also has her own podcast, the reason that we do it, or one of the big reasons we do these podcasts, is purely selfish. It's because we get to meet amazing people and we get to learn amazing things. Now, hopefully, it's also really great for the listeners and they're learning all of this information too. And I'm sure listening to your podcast, people will be. It sounds like a great way for people to, I guess, just put their foot or their toe into the water before they actually even speak to you, and just to get to know you better, get to know your personality, get to know who you are. So yeah, that sounds like an awesome podcast.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to let you go in a second. Of course, at the end of this episode, we will have a story from Puck Creations, as we always do. But for now, Claudia, it has been such a pleasure. I've really discovered so much. So it's been amazing. Thank you very much for coming on.
Likewise, and thanks again for having me on the show. I hope, you know, the listeners found my clients and my stories interesting, and hopefully they found at least one small nugget from it that they can either implement in their lives or share with someone or some of their loved ones that are maybe currently job searching.
I'm sure they will. And I'm sure that lots of people will be coming to say hello to you very soon as well. So thanks again.
Take care. I look forward to
it. Bye-bye.
Without doubt, you'll be looking forward to it too. What a great guest Claudia was. Thank you so much for joining us on the Storytelling with Puck podcast. We hope you were leaning forward throughout all of that, as we're sure you will be when you listen to Andrew Forbes' podcast called Leading Forward. But now, it's time for something from Puck Creations. This piece is called Reach Your Potential. Respect your fellow human. Engage when you can. Answer every question. Create glass from grains of sand. Hold on to what you believe. Yield for those in need. Open your mind. It will set you free. Unlock your heart so you can see. Reflect, recharge, restart. Push the boundaries, make your mark. Obliterate fear, light the spark. Treat every day like it could be your last. Entertain and be entertained. Never give up. It's okay to feel drained. Take your time, there's a lot to gain. Invite your heart and your mind, they make a great team. Advise and be advised, but never blindly follow. Love, learn, and live. It's your turn today, it'll be your turn tomorrow.
You've just been listening to the Storytelling with Puck podcast. We'll be back very soon, so make sure you subscribe and catch up on any of the episodes you've missed.